David in Belfast. Morning, David.
Good morning.
Go ahead, David.
Basically, I would like to ask the people who are saying there should be an amnesty or a line drawn in the sand as such, you know, why should that be the case? Because I'm a victim myself, you know.
Well, because you might not ever get the truth, and maybe you should realise it.
Well, yeah, everybody needs to
justice, sorry. You might never get justice, sorry.
Yeah. Everybody needs to know what happened, you know, whether it be back in the 70s, the 80s or whatever. You look at the international criminal courts and the European courts of rights, they've been pursuing war criminals for years. So they have. And why should this be any different? They've been pursuing people for decades for heinous crimes, like the crimes that were committed here in Northern Ireland. And some of the crimes here in Northern Ireland have been the worst, you know, in history.
But the logic...
You know, look at the Enniskillen and Omagh bombs. You know, how can people walk away and say, yeah, let's forget about that?
I know, David, you lost your aunt in the Shankill bomb.
It wasn't the Shankill bomb. It was the Beardo bomb.
Sorry, my fault. My fault, David. I'm sorry about that. What I was going to say was that the logic to the peace process was that there was this was not just a normal crime wave. Now, I'm not arguing this. I'm saying the logic to it in terms of the early prisoner release, the Good Friday Agreement, was that this was not just any type of normal crime wave, that there was a political context to the crime that happened. And therefore, that's the hinterland.
How can there be a political context to justify blowing up, you know, innocent men, women, and children?
Well, because some people saw it as a war.
No, it wasn't a war. It wasn't a war. There's no chance this was a war. Yeah, maybe in Republican minds it was a war, but nobody else seen it as a war. Everybody else seen it as murder, plain and simple.
So you don't think the British? You don't think the British Army saw it as a war? You don't think the British actually saw it as a war?
The British Army were protecting people. They were doing their job. They were doing a job they were paid for. They were doing a job they were instructed to by their government. They you know, they lost a lot of people too, of course.
So it's how a lot of the paramilitaries.
They were protecting the general public. This is my point. They were protecting innocent people. There's a lot of innocent people. Yes, there was paramilitaries in both sides, you know.
But they sleep in their beds at night, David. How they sleep in their beds at night is convincing themselves that it was a war.
Well, those people may be able to lie there convincing themselves that it was a war, but it will never, ever, ever take away the fact that they murdered in cold blood, women, men and children.
Tell you what, David, stay there. We'll take more of your calls. I know there's a particular man I want you to speak to in just a second or two. Here's the number today, 03030 80 55 55. The reason we're talking about this is that the Chief Constable, George Hamilton, says he would support at least a debate about whether to draw a line under Northern Ireland's troubled past. Michael in Belfast. Morning, Michael. Morning, Michael.
Stephen. Hello.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, I'm speaking to you this morning as a victim in what we have become known as the Troubles. I was in a bar with a couple of friends of mine watching a football match in 1973. Two guys on a motorbike pulled up outside, got off. One of them got off, threw a bomb in. Mom was badly injured. In fact, the man had lost a leg. An off-duty policeman followed them over to the Ravenhill Road, arrested them, and the two lads got 11 years each. Now, I know what it is like to be involved in something like that. Now, what I'm going to say is, and I'm very impressed with what John Taggart said there earlier on, Stephen, The two things go hand in hand, and that is truth and justice, right? You can't get one without the other. Now, the participant...
You can't get one without the other, but the whole point is maybe you can.
No, you can't.
Maybe the only way you get truth is by foregoing justice.
Well, that is a big ask of people who rightly don't want to forgo justice, because I'm not going to put one foot in one camp here and one foot in another camp. What I'm saying to you is, and quite clearly what I'm saying, you can't get, they not get both, because one goes hand in hand. Now, what I will say is, how can you get truth when some of the participants in the conflict or the troubles or whatever you want to call it, the war or whatever you want to call it, when they deny categorically that they were never members of these organizations, how can you get justice when the British government, who have a track record of manipulating the truth to their own advantage, they are not prepared to tell the whole truth about the dirty, stinking war that went on in Northern Ireland from their point of view? And the paramilitaries, I don't think, are prepared to tell the truth.
What do you make of those comments about the British government, David?
Well, everybody has their opinion on the British government and what they did or didn't do. But the British...
Let me get Maliki's response to what he's just heard too. Sorry, David. Go ahead, Maliki.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is that when we made the peace deal, we didn't make it with the paramilitaries themselves. We made it with their proxies. When at the end of what's called the Irish War of Independence, for instance, there were systems by where people who were combatants, if you like, registered, you know, and they went into files. I mean, largely that was for the sake of government pensions and so on, which you wouldn't want here. But if you had made the deal with the IRA and with the UVF and the UDA and registered their names and you knew who they were, then you could be dealing with these organisations around what they might concede and what they might trade for an amnesty. We gave an effective amnesty at the end of the peace process or at the end of the Good Friday negotiations by ensuring that people would only serve 2 years anyway if they were caught. And we didn't get anything back for that. We didn't, for instance, some people thought that the Good Friday Agreement established that the paramilitaries would all have to give up their weapons in return for the prisoner releases. And they didn't. They got their prisoner releases anyway. So we were never very good at, standing up to the paramilitaries and making deals with them and saying, yes, you will get this, but you must give this in return. And in some way, if there was some way where you could go back to the IRA and the UVF and the UDA and the other paramilitary...
It's a bit late now.
It is a bit late now, but do they want an amnesty? Do they get anything? Do they get any benefit from an amnesty? You know, I'm sure there's quite a few out there who would think, you know, I might sleep better in my bed if I thought there was never any chance now that in my old age there'd be a knock on the door and I'd be taken away, you know? So there might be somebody who would have a strong incentive to do that.
Maliki, thank you. 030 30 80 55 55. We have put the following questions to the Chief Constable. We've done this about 10 minutes ago. The questions that the Nolan Show is now putting to the Chief Constable: why does he think there needs to be a debate as to whether to draw a line under Northern Ireland's troubles? What is his personal view? We heard the personal view of the Attorney General in 2013. So let's see if we're going to get the personal view of the Chief Constable. And in other words, does he think a line should be drawn under the past? Those are the three questions that we have put to the Chief Constable this morning. We will let you know if he responds. We'll take one more call on this, then we'll move on. Excuse me, here's the East Belfast resident. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. Just like the comment, in a way there has been a line drawn under a lot of crimes through the Good Friday Agreement. The BBC done a very good programme on Monday night, I don't know where you watched it, about the dockyard bombing on the sniper in South Armagh. One of the snipers, the sniper in the Armagh, he got over 100 years in prison. That was his sentence. He served less than 18 months. So at the end of the day, what about the victims of the Dockland bombing and the sniper, the soldiers that he killed?
Like, well, I mean, that was under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, wasn't it?
It was the Good Friday Agreement. This is what I'm saying. But why can't this be done again? It was done. The Good Friday was brought in to get this company to go forward. This line that they're talking about now should be brought in for the same reason.
And yet you've heard some people articulate this morning how painful it would be.
Yes, but did anybody take into consideration the hundreds of Sinn Féin and loyalist prisoners that walked out the gates after killing people and serving less than a year? Was that taken into consideration at the time? It was to move people
forward. It's IRA prisoners you're talking about, not Sinn Féin prisoners.
Pardon?
It's IRA prisoners you're talking about, not Sinn Féin prisoners.
No, yes, correct, sorry. IRA prisoners and loyalist prisoners walked out of jail. Like, that sniper got over 100 years. He served less than 18 months. What about his victims and the soldiers he killed? Were the politicians and the people taken into consideration of the Good Friday Agreement? It was a way to move forward, and drawing a line under this now is another way of moving forward.
Okay, morning. Morning to you. Malachy, thank you. Basil McRae, thank you very much indeed. 0330 80 55 55. The text 81771 at Stephen Nolan on Twitter. We'll let you know if the Chief Constable gets back to us this morning.